right. This is Pure Decking, show number 475 for Thursday, April the 14th, 1970. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and... Oh, that's the same joke. Yeah, trying to figure out how to hack time. Must have done it wrong, because now we're stuck in a loop. Joining us tonight, we have Mr. Madman. What's up, Madman?
Nothing much. Getting some bourbon, watching time loop.
That or your record is scratched. You might want to try banging on the side of your head a few times.
Upgraded to CDs. I guess they still could be scratched.
Oh, Rat says he's now... Long day, so now he's getting high and listening. That's not the greatest of ideas. We go some pretty strange places. And we have an RU. Oh. So. Anyways. I've got no witty banter for tonight. I don't know about you guys. I've kind of had a shitty week, truth be told. So,
I've been informed that I have an upbeat, cheerful attitude.
Lies.
That's what I thought.
So, anyways, yeah, no, it's just been rough. Anyways, so $3,000 worth, found $100 worth of bat using Brave yesterday, huh? Nice. Anyways, I guess we'll get into it here. We'll start here with this article from the Unseen Opportunity, or what is it, unseenop.com. Goldman advisors say no deal to Musk's Twitter bid. So now, for anybody who's, you know, not aware, you know, Musk bought a whole bunch of Twitter stock, was going to be on the board, then decided at the last minute he wasn't. Now he's offering a buyout of the company at like $54.20 a share. And I don't really feel the need to read the article. Basically, Goldman and a bunch of other people are telling Twitter not to take the deal, even though he's offering like 10 bucks over the current trading stock price. They're all saying hold out for more. So the theory I had, and I wanted to run this by Madman because he knows more about this than I do. Can he now, if they actually refuse his offer, since he's offering 10 bucks above, or give or take, the trading value of the current stock, could he then turn around and sue the rest of the Twitter board and the advisors for not acting in what it was, the fiduciary responsibility, given that he was going to make them 10 bucks over the trading price of the stock?
It depends on if there are any other bids and kind of what the average stock price has been for about the last 6 months. Because Twitter did get up to $73. So they could argue bid a little higher. They could come back with a counterproposal. But if they don't take a bid and can't show that they had a better offer or a good faith reason not to take the bid, he can take them to court. It's just not a guarantee. Because I just pulled up the last the year-to-date range for Twitter stock. It's been as low as 31.30, as high as 73.34. So they could come in and say, it's been as high as 73. That's what we
want. Okay. Well, I was just curious because it seemed like that might be kind of the point of getting a big chunk of the Twitter stock, is so that he could make the argument that they're not acting in his, you know, because as a shareholder.
Yeah. And he can make that suit if they don't take his offer. But he also has another little cudgel that I'm surprised more people aren't talking about. And dump his stock.
Well, he's threatening to. And apparently, the funny thing is, and at least in the article, and this is one of the reasons I wanted to use this particular article because there's tons of them about this. Goldman Sachs is advising, you know, not to take the deal from Musk because they think it's too low, but they currently are ranking the Twitter stock price as a sell at $30 a share. So, that seems odd. Or just, you know, Goldman Sachs is a huge financial company and they've just got the, you know, two different people and they're not, you know, not communicating all that well. But, Sycor says he's already being sued. Apparently, the SEC is not particularly happy with him trying to manipulate the stock price of Twitter. So,
yeah, he's got a couple of investigations going on right now.
Yeah,
I don't think they'll find anything. It's pretty much anyone connected to Biden wanting to smack him on the nose with a newspaper.
Oh, because, yeah, that's right. They hate rich people right now.
Yeah, he's going to be fine. He hasn't done anything.
Oh, Sycro says another shareholder is suing him because he took a controlling stake or something like that. 11 days late noted for the disclosure of his acquisition.
Yeah, with his filing, he's... With the 9% bid, he actually filed that he wasn't going to take control. It's the current bids that he's actually trying to take controlling stock.
I gotcha. So, the thing here for me, I don't use Twitter very much. I occasionally look at somebody else's post, but I don't have an account, or at least not anymore. Shut it down. I don't care. You know, it's kind of fun to point and laugh at and just see how crazy people have gotten. Apparently, people are actually arguing that to protect free speech, we need more censorship, which I don't understand the logic of that one, but apparently that's an argument people are making. So, I mean, you know this stuff better than I do, Madman. What do you think?
It depends on what they're meaning by free speech. There are some things I think we need to do to help out with free speech. Like in our country, Supreme Court has gut libel law to being damn near useless. And that, the ability to lie isn't free speech. Now, you can say something and be wrong, but when we have corporations and news companies knowingly lying and knowing nothing can happen to them, that harms free speech. So if they mean beef up our libel laws a bit, or I forget which Supreme Court case gutted them but overturn it, I'm fine with that. But when it comes to, here's a list of things you can't say on Twitter, fuck you.
I think it's the latter. Because it's people who, apparently there were some people going through and finding on the timeline where the same people were saying Twitter's a private company, they can do what they want. And others are like, no, he can't change the rules on Twitter. It's like,
yeah, it'll be his private company. He can do what he wants.
Yeah, so it's you know, it's like, no, my arguments only work when they work in my favor. I don't know. I don't really have a dog in the fight anymore. I'm more just kind of watching it and laughing. What do you think, are you?
I would have done it a different way if I was Elon Musk. Be happy with my 9.7% stake. And then just threw it out there. Hey, why don't we publicly own Twitter? Everybody buy one.
It is publicly owned.
No, but I mean, everybody buy one share.
Oh, you mean publicly owned as in seize the means.
As in the real public.
Yeah, yeah. Seize the means publicly owned.
Right. And then just buy one share. Like, it's not a large investment, but it gives you an actual stake in Twitter. And just hand over voting interest to Elon Musk. Have it owned by millions and millions of people instead of 10 corporations and one Saudi prince.
And just vote him to be chairman of the board?
Exactly. And let him go at it. Like, just, we have a great, this is a great opportunity for a very big experiment. And I want to see it happen. I want to see Twitter become a free-for-all again. Let's get the Hug Box a big kick and throw some Hornets in there and murder Hornets, actually. Let's see how many suicides we can push.
That's a great visual. Hornets into the Hug Box nursery.
Yep. I mean, let's see how many of these fragile fucktards we can push to jump for Trump. You know what I mean? I would have done it that way. That would have been a perfect Clown World scenario. Hey, can you just imagine the amount of faggots going, I own a part of this company. Go fuck yourself, faggot. I can say what I want. You know, like, I think we've got a golden opportunity here to, yeah, throw Hornets in the Hug Box.
I don't know how many people actually know how to vote with their stock, though.
No, just sign your controlling interest over to Elon.
Well, if we're going to do that, there's probably better people we could pick than Elon.
Yeah, but he's already in there. He looks like he's spoiling for the fight. And hell, I don't want to be suicided by the Clintons, do you?
No, not particularly.
But, I mean, good thing that they're going after the kids because they can't call Elon a pedophile at the moment. Bet the worst they can do is a racist.
He's an African-American.
Doesn't matter. You guys know that doesn't matter. He's a racist transphobe who wants to kill grandma with space AIDS. You know, let's face it. Elon Musk wants to give everyone space AIDS.
That all of his rocket ships look like penises?
No, it's Jeff Bezos, more like a phallic symbol than... Anyway, I thought there was a better way to go about it. I thought he might have been a little more creative than he actually is, but maybe he is playing hardball and wants the company.
I think he wants the company. I think he actually wants to turn it into something profitable.
Well, I imagine he probably looked at it and it's like, oh, fine, I'll go start my own social media site with blackjack and hookers. Wait, I'm fucking rich. I'll just buy a social media site. I'm sure that's all it is.
I think he looked at the problems Gab and Telegram had with their kicking off and just went, I don't want them problems. I'll buy an established brand.
Yeah.
That's already built. But this is the way I see it playing out. Elon Musk buys company. Company stock goes through the roof in the first quarter. Second quarter, it crashes out as Twitter becomes Wild Wild West fucking shithole and the Hornets chase out the Hug Box wankers. And, and keep going on with the arguments, but just knowing that Twitter is no longer the base for all these. I'm gonna pick my words correctly.
They can still be there, you know.
Oh, they can. I don't want them kicked off. They're just gonna have to eat some shit, you know.
Opening it up to the other half of the population won't actually increase its use, possibly increase its stock value.
Dude, I'm pretty sure most of the mainstream media will stop quoting Twitter the minute Elon, and they'll have their big everybody get off Twitter, fuck Elon, yeah, and they'll all cancel their accounts while secretly 5 minutes later making an alt account, and then just posting the most heinous shit they can think of posting. And you go, look, see, I was right. Elon destroyed the website.
Well, weren't there a bunch of journalists who got caught doing that to 4chan? They would post some nasty crap to 4chan and then screenshot it and then say, look at the horrid stuff that's on 4chan.
Yeah.
It's like,
because they thought it was completely anonymous, but it's not.
Yeah. And you know, somebody pointed out how the ID system on there worked, pointing out it was all the same browser session or some BS.
Uh-huh. So. Yeah. It wouldn't be the first time. But that's generally how things go. And we're in Cloud World, man. It's very easy to predict. Nothing new ever happens.
Yeah,
same old shit show every fucking day.
All right,
let's
move on to a shit show from your part of the world. Are you?
Yay!
We'll pick one that's less prominent. This is from Insider.com. Finfluencers could face up to 5 years in prison if they provide financial advice without a license. The Australian government says.
Good.
So
influencers.
Financial influencers. Apparently, this is like a thing in our use area. That's already not a thing here because, you know, this is why you always hear everyone say, not a lawyer, not financial advice, because they already know they'll get in trouble for this shit over here.
Yeah. Yeah. So, they just need to crack down on the law here for it. they turned their back on it because the people paying the influencers were also the credit card companies and all that, and it was in their interest to get people hooked on payday loan systems and shit like that. But they were pretty much using them to push your buy now, pay later bullshit that all the kids are into these days. That's why they're cracking down on it, man.
Yeah, Australia's hugely popular financial influencers, or finfluencers, could be jailed for up to 5 years if they continue giving financial advice to their followers without a license. That's according to an information sheet issued last month by the company's corporate watchdog, the Australian Securities and Investments Commission. Finfluencers use social media to advertise on everything from financial products to budgeting, with even some promising significant returns on specific investments, despite many not holding financial service licenses. That's no longer allowed in Australia. Quote, if you think about your content carefully and whether you are providing unlicensed financial services, such as providing financial product advice or dealing by arranging, unquote, ASIC wrote, quote, if you carry a business of providing financial services, you must hold an Australian financial services license, unquote. The information sheet lists several examples of text that would constitute financial product advice. Because it goes on talking about apparently several of these guys were telling people specific commodities or stocks to buy, which yeah. I'm pretty sure that's not verboten anywhere, because I know they don't do, we're not allowed to do that here. Like if I went and told everyone to go buy a specific stock, somebody would bother to figure out who we are just to, you know, prosecute us for it.
Dude, I look at stock and financial advice the same as I look at Sunday morning horse racing advice on the television. You know what I mean?
Yep.
You just can't, you're gambling either way.
Well, they've already taken somebody named Tyson Schultz to court for giving out financial advice on his Instagram account. Yeah, operating a financial services business without a license, quote, by delivering training courses and seminars about trading and securities on the ASX, unquote. Those courses were prompted on his Instagram, or promoted on his Instagram and Twitter accounts. So he was selling courses without a license, and I guess that's a thing. I don't know enough about it to know how far you're not supposed to do that, because I know it's kind of a line. But
as long as he's not claiming to be accredited, I don't see a problem.
Yeah, I don't either, man. And
I don't think you should need a license to give out financial advice.
I don't think you should take stock advice from some random person on the internet, personally.
If you take relationship advice, should it be from someone who's happily married for the last 30 years?
Or I would give them more credit. Yeah, I'd give them more credit.
But that's what I mean. Like, just because you've done it successfully for 30 years doesn't mean you're a professional. Maybe you're just lucky.
When it comes to business, a big chunk of it is luck. But if you have 30 years of experience and are successful, you have more right to claim yourself an expert than someone that just got a 4-year degree. And that's what they're saying. They want you to have a license. License is a class. It doesn't mean that you actually know what you're doing.
Well, that's what I mean. It's just because you got a license doesn't mean I'm going to listen to you a little bit more than I listen to someone without one, but
do they limit the number of licenses they give out? Is it like taxi tokens?
I don't know enough about finance, man. It's not my thing.
Yeah.
You know? My brother, he's a professional thief, so he might be able to fill you in on that.
Yeah, I'm against the whole cracking down on people without a license. Just always know when you take financial advice, you're taking a risk.
Exactly.
Well, the one thing
is, look at the record of the dude you're taking advice from. If he's got more wins than losses, great.
I mean, if you're actually going to a financial advisor and they go blow all your money at the horse racing track, you can actually sue them for that here. It's one of the reasons they are licensed. They have to be able to show that they made a good faith effort to get a proper return on your investments. Now, just because you lose money doesn't mean you can sue them. But, you know, if, like
I
said,
graded each year as professional money advisor? thing? So do you get...
No, but you have
someone
to...
check and balance you? Or can you just be really crappy and be in business for like 20 years?
You can probably be really crappy and be in business. It's just a question of, you know, does it look like there's malice? Like, are you, you know, grifting money? Or are you, you know, doing
there are business shit? Journals that you can look at, and people do keep track of wins, losses for financial. That's why you can pull up and see so-and-so's goldfish did better than somebody.
Yeah.
Do keep track of that. And I think that's all you really should look at. I don't care if you have a license.
Hey, Madman, I think you need to adjust the your voice activation on your new headset there, because I'm hearing you cut out a bit.
Okay.
In recent years, Finfluencers have increased in popularity, especially among younger audiences. According to a December ASIC survey, 1/3 of Australians aged 18 to 21 follow a financial influencer online. Survey also found that 64% of young people in Australia admitted they changed their economic behavior after listening to an influencer. With that, they didn't say whether that's good or bad. I mean, if they're saying save money and don't buy cryptocurrency or don't buy, cryptos are a thing. I probably shouldn't say that since we're saying we can't give people advice. But NFTs, I think we can all agree, are probably not a great idea.
Oh, no, man. I say get in on the NFT market now. Get in hard. I mean, gamble everything. I'm not a financial advisor. Not licensed anyway.
Psychro says the licenses are not a track record, mostly just a vocab test. You only need to store 70%. I'm assuming this is in the States. Only 70% on the Series 7 and work for a firm member. Advisors need a 65 or 66. Licenses are mostly to show you know the fraud laws. So yeah, when you do steal, correctly. They can nail you to wall saying you can't claim ignorance of them. I mean, some of the fraud laws, I mean, I've had to do training for work too. Some of them are kind of out there. Like, you can be held responsible for some things that it's one of these things. If you didn't know that was fraud, you might not think it was fraud. You know what I mean?
If no one went to prison after 08, there is no fucking fraud laws. There are no fraud laws. That's all I'm saying.
Some of the political influence books I've been reading lately, there are fraud laws, and there's a reason people are getting out of them. It's called giving the politicians piles of cash.
Yes. If you can do what Hunt the fucking Biden's meant to have done, there is no fraud law.
I guess to finish out the article here, finance micro-influencer... I don't know what a micro-influencer is. Ellie Withers, who posts under the Instagram handle at thelady.fire, told insiders that... Well, I mean, with that name, you could... Never mind. I was going to make a bad joke. I'm just going to stop it. The one I'm... Rats wants to know what book I'm reading. It's the one about Hunter Biden, The Laptop from Hell. It's pretty one-sided. But basically, with that laptop, they got the guy's Apple account. His iCloud account. So they've got all of his emails, all of his texts, and a lot of it is not political. A lot of it is like their personal shit, and it is rough reading.
And 10% for the big guy.
Yeah. Basically, they were getting, according to the book, now, this, you know, whether this is true or not is up in the air, but according to the book, they were influenced, you know, by Hunter Biden was influencing, peddling with his dad, calling in favors with all of his dad's friends for judges they've appointed and things like that to get his friends off the hook for poor investment practices.
Dude, he fucking Joe Biden himself sat on stage, said, I made a phone call and said, if that prosecutor isn't fired, you don't get your $10 billion.
Yeah.
And the next day he was fired and everyone laughs and claps. I'm like, he just admitted to international fucking fraud there.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, that's where we're at. You know, if you're wondering, and I'm sorry for the black pill, if you're wondering where we're at, people, that's the spot. People are clapping at this.
Yeah, Rats, the book is mainly about just having the right political connections and stupid amounts of money, and that's how you get out of fraud laws.
If you're looking to start with guns, germs, and steel, at
I don't think
book.
I've read that one.
But, it's pretty much how the world markets came about.
But
like how wealth in first worlds came about. A lot of it is coincidences, but a lot of it was planned.
What Magnetar pulled off in 2008, scary as shit. And none of them have gone to jail.
Okay, dude. You can drop something like the Panama Papers and no one fucking prints shit. You know what I mean? The names are right there with the fucking numbers and where they got it from. Right?
Yep, but this micro-influencer on Instagram here, apparently, now that person, they're going to fucking jail.
Yeah, fuck them.
Yeah, because what she told the insider, she had to remove some of her old posts to comply with the new rules. Quote, I've had to archive my net worth updates as they showed what I invest in, and that's not allowed, said the 29-year-old, who does not have a financial services license. Quote, they were posts on what I invest in, like the actual ETFs, and the new rules state we can't share what we invest in as it could influence our followers to buy that, unquote. Withers, who has more than 1,300 followers on her account, only 1,000. That's why they've called her a micro influencer. She only had 1,000 followers. Said that the guide is very broad and doesn't make it easy to decipher. Well, that's kind of on purpose. They do make a lot of these laws, Frank. You know,
I'll make it easy for you, Psychros, because you've had a bad week. Just go to a movie. It's called The Big Short. And start your 08 crash investigation from there. Start off with a movie.
So, yeah, they'll go after the influencer on Instagram with 1,000 followers, but the big people? No, of course not. So,
but Freddie and Fannie Mae and those and Moody's, everyone in Moody's should have gone to prison. Just saying, those who are grading the housing stocks. And who's the other big grading house?
The Germany one, they flat out admitted to manipulating currencies.
Yeah, well, Deutsche Bank, yeah, but they've been broke for 10 years now. Everyone knows Deutsche is broke. So is London Bank. It's broke. And we're just waiting for it to drop because right now we're in the big
short. S&P?
Standard & Poor's. Yeah, they're in on it as well. And I think when this one collapses, because it's going to, it'll be the same people did the same fucking thing they did all over again, but there won't be any TARP or TARP 2.0. It's just going to have to happen. And this is where I think we're going to get into the digital dollar. But don't listen to me, man. I'm black-pilled as shit.
Rats, I honestly don't know what the rules are on manipulating currency. I know Deutsche Bank got in trouble because they were doing it with international trades. Like, it wasn't just the euro. They were manipulating a ton of crap.
They were also money laundering, too, like a motherfucker.
The WTO puts out rules, and everyone that is a member of the WTO is supposed to follow them. So, technically, yes, each country has a little bit of play on what they can do with their currency. The reason people were crapping on China is we allowed China into the WTO, which opened up their markets to a lot of other countries to invest in them and to trade with them, made them able to get a lot richer. But they weren't following the guidelines set forth by the WTO on what exactly you can do to your money.
I think Trump had the right idea and start cutting China off because they're not playing the game. They're not, you know, operating as a Western style free market. They're manipulating it as hell and basically getting rich off of it. But
our market's got to implode first before we can start talking about other people's markets because ours is built on a fucking lie right now. It's a complete fucking lie. Our economic system is a lie. It is, sorry to say, it's just being propped up by a fake housing market once again. And
oh yeah, it's nuts right now. When that collapses, I mean, that's going to be
madman. You're nearly as old as I am. Does anything in the last 8 years seem normal to you when it comes to financial?
No, we've let the Fed loose in this country when it comes to printing money. They finally let loose the notes from the 2008 crisis. And whereas they said they were only going to print about $5 trillion, they printed over $30 trillion. That's what's propping up the inflation right now. Mm-hmm. It's a shit ton. And it didn't just stay in the U.S.
Nope.
We gave trillions of dollars to Britain, to Australia. We devalued the dollar worldwide.
Devalued the Western world.
Crazy.
While sending inflation through the roof, which they fucking hide it by changing the CPI standards constantly. So, and
well, let's talk about something lighter. You know, cops using copyrighted music to prevent themselves from being filmed. This is from
telling me they're blasting out fucking Disney opera or some shit like Frozen.
Japalink. This is from I don't know. I don't think I'm saying it right. Japalink. It's a car blog. Police officer in Santa Ana, California, admitted to blaring Disney favorites from a squad car PA system in an attempt to keep citizens' video of their actions off YouTube. Just so happens they woke up a sleeping city council member who took to police to task for their annoying and suspicious tactic. like Jalopy. So Jalopnik. Okay, I gotcha. Yeah. I usually stay away from a lot of these sites. They used to all be in one big network that I didn't think was very useful. But this was just too funny. The cops literally admitted to blaring Disney music so that you couldn't post their videos to YouTube of like videos of them doing shit.
I want to see some severe police brutality to Frozen. The fucking one of those songs, you know.
Let it go, bitch, just, crack.
You know, just fucking some Elsa song playing out, some father's having traumatic flashbacks as his daughter wanted to watch the DVD 9,000 fucking times.
Oh, that's I'll great submit because I can officer edit it. If they do a Frozen one, it'll be easily to edit out the Frozen music and then change it to "Will You Help Me Hide a Body," which was also set to a Frozen song.
Using copyright infringement against those who record police actions hasn't really worked so far, which may be why this officer decided to really blare the Disney tunes during the investigation of a car theft. At the moment, the video posted by the Santa Ana audits is still up after being posted 6 days ago, so it's safe to say the police officer woke up an entire community for nothing. As Vice points out, the tactic is well known. He's playing music, the YouTuber said in Spanish, because he knows that on my YouTube channel I can't upload videos with music in them. For a few moments, the video showed red and blue lights flashing across the street, and we hear the lyrics that recall the animated friendship of Buzz Lightyear and Woody. It's one of the Toy Story songs. This is yet another entry in a pattern of police playing copyrighted music while being filmed. Starting last year, cops have played Sublime, The Beatles in Beverly Hills, country music in Illinois, and Taylor Swift in Alameda County, California, in response to being recorded by civilians in what is looking more and more like a collective attempt of police officers attempting to trick online platforms into auto-censoring videos of their actions. I mean, this is cyberpunk as hell.
Yes.
Rats wants to see Smash Mouth over a riot fight.
I'll let the bodies hit the floor, drowning pool. No. That's
Rats.
Cops at a riot. They need to play Let's Start a Riot.
Rats,
just launching tear gas to Let's Start a Riot.
If you're interested, there is an officer dash like body cam of a police officer in his cruiser getting ready to assist an officer down, and he is playing Let the Bodies Hit the Floor as he's locking and loading his AR on the dashboard, and then pulls up shooting the AR the gun through the fucker windshield at the suspect with Body Hit the Floor.
That's going to look really great on in the internal investigations. So
I have no idea where this video would be sitting right now, but it's out there. I've seen it.
Let's see. Best part of the video by far is when Santa Ana City Council member Jonathan Ryan Hernandez showed up and confronted the police about the tactic. The cop playing the music admitted to what the protesters and others who filmed police actions had known all along. Hernandez gave the officer an epic dressing down and demanded an apology for the person filming the scene. Yeah, they've got the play-by-play. basically it's the city council member saying, what the fuck are you doing? That's not, you know, this isn't right. So Santa Ana Police Department released a statement on Twitter acknowledging the video. Santa Ana PD told police that using squad car audio is not a department policy. YouTube won't always remove video for copyright infringement. Sometimes the site will place an ad on the video with proceeds going to a copyright holder. Hernandez, who witnessed the Santa Ana police gun down his cousin shortly after taking office, managed to find some dark humor in the moment. quote, I noticed they were playing songs from Coco and Encanto. Those were movies that Disney's had used to bridge the Latino community. Then the police used that to try to silence us, he said. Pretty ironic. So... I guess that's what they were playing it from, but I guess they're just doing the Disney's greatest hits. And of course, Disney would be very litigious, so it's a good choice, but fuck.
I just need to know which one of you village people killed my brother, Utah.
That's a terrible movie.
It was one long setup to a crappy joke. I didn't think it was terrible. It was mediocre.
I mean, it did have that guy getting crushed with a dumpster at the end, so that was kind of funny. Right after thanking God, now that I think about it.
That's what you get for thanking God while wearing a ball gag and a leather thong.
Oh. All right, let's get back to... Oh, something I know a little about. Accounts deceivable, email scam, costliest type of cybercrime. It's kind of a duh, but here we go. Richmond, Virginia. A shopping spree in Beverly Hills. A luxury vacation in Mexico. A bank account that jumped from $299.77 to $1.4 million overnight. How did that not raise flags? From the outside, it looked like... Well, maybe that's how they got caught. From the outside, it looked like... what movie were we talking about? One Night at McCool's. It's not a great
movie. It's an early 2000s movie, I think.
Yeah, I mean, the whole movie is just setting it up for the ending scene, really. But from the outside, it looked like Mo and Katrina Arkbard had won the lottery. But this big payday didn't come from lucky numbers. Rather, a public school district in Michigan was tricked into wiring its monthly health insurance payment into the bank account of a California nail salon the Arkbards owned, according to a... I'm probably saying that name wrong. According to a search warrant applied application filed by a Secret Service agent in federal court. The district and taxpayers fell victim to an online scam called Business Email Compromised, or BEC. Nobody calls it BEC, the police say. The couple deny any wrongdoing and have not been charged with a crime. BEC scams are a type of crime where criminals hack into email accounts, pretend to be somebody they're not, and fool victims into sending money where it doesn't belong. These crimes get far less attention than massive ransomware attacks that have triggered powerful government response, but BEC scams have been by far the costliest type of cybercrime in the U.S. for years, according to the FBI, siphoning untold billions from the economy as authorities struggle to keep up. Why are they calling it BEC? Yeah, Rat says, why are they calling it BEC? It's just wire fraud with extra steps. I've explained this before, but basically this is where you get into a business email account. The one I'm familiar with is mortgages. You know, they'll get into like a broker's account. And the general scam is you watch the account and you make sure you get a copy of when the wire transfer instructions are sent for paying the, you know, actually doing the money transfer of paying the mortgage, right? So when you take out a mortgage, that's a big ass loan. Well, the bank is still wiring the total amount of the mortgage to whoever you bought the house from. So the idea with the one I'm familiar with mortgages is you watch in the background for when this is about to happen. And then, like, the day before closing, you take the original wire transfer instructions, you pull it into Photoshop, you change it up, you'll wrap it in a PDF, and you send it, hey, we had a last-minute change, use these wire transfer instructions from the compromised account. And if you're really unlucky, what will happen is the bank will wire the mortgage money to the new account, not the old one, and... then you end up with a very interesting scenario where the person selling the house say, hey, are you going to pay me? I'm not releasing the title and the keys until I get paid, with the mortgage company saying, we just paid you. And then the person looking to buy the house left holding the bag, basically, because they have a mortgage that they never received the house for, which makes foreclosing even more interesting because who owns it at that point? And what really gets fun is when it's when they don't send the wire transfer or the wire instructions from the compromised account, but instead a third party account set up to look like the compromised account or just spoof the headers. Then you get into really fun arguments because, of course, none of the businesses want to take the loss of, you know, whatever the cost of the house was. So this is the same thing. It's just instead of a mortgage, they're doing it for, in this case, it was health insurance payments. So
another thing on the mortgage side is instead of just compromising, just get an email account, an address that looks close enough to, I don't know, Bank of America and say, hey, we're from here, and just see how many idiots you have in payoffs willing to change shit on an unverified email.
Dude, the one I've seen, the one that made me the most mad when I saw it, was they had registered a Gmail account that had the name of the email account, no at sign, but then the company name, .com@gmail.com. Rats is saying, I've told stories like this for a while. It's like, yeah, because it keeps happening. I've been seeing this kind of stuff for years. I've dealt with it professionally a few times. It's not fun. Yeah, just Jay wasn't his legal name, but he signed all of his emails that way, and that was enough to convince him. Okay, yeah, I believe that. Again, that's where they just watch the emails. They don't even, it's not like they don't even really care what's in them. They just use them as a template when they're ready to send the scam email. So, yeah, the huge payoffs and low risks associated with business email compromise scams have attracted criminals worldwide. Some flaunt their ill-gotten riches on social media, posting pictures next to their Ferraris, Bentleys, and stacks of cash. Quote, the scammers are extremely well-organized, and law enforcement is not, unquote, said Sherry Williams, a director of a San Francisco nonprofit recently hit by a business email compromise scam. Losses to the U.S. and BEC scams in 2021 were nearly $2.4 billion. I guarantee that number is underreported. According to a new report by the FBI, that's a 33% increase from 2020 and more than tenfold increase from 7 years ago. And what experts say many victims never, come forward, and the FBI's number is only a small fraction of how much money is really stolen. Quote, it's one of the most lucrative things out there, unquote, said Shablof Moyen, chief product officer at Area 1 Security. In the nail salon case involving Grand Rapids, police say $2.8 million was stolen. Banks were able to recall about half the amount once the scam was discovered, court records show. A Secret Service agent said in an affidavit as part of a search warrant application that someone hacked into the email account of one of the school's district human resource employees and sent emails that persuaded a colleague in the finance department to change the bank account where the health insurance payments were sent. The emails were brief and unfailingly polite. Please kindly update. Okay. In all seriousness, unless you know you work with Indian contractors and you see the word kindly in an email, it's a scam. Mm-hmm. No one, seriously.
Yeah.
Madman, you work in this industry. Who do you know that uses the word kindly in common email parlance?
The only country is India.
Confidence word.
It's not a confidence word used by confidence men in the U.S. It is literally an Indian word.
And I'm telling you, unless you know you work with Indian contractors, use kindly in an I'm an Irish. Do you really, rats? Okay. I guess unless you're a BioShock fan and you go around saying, would you kindly?
No, I used a lot in get people to comply when wrangling.
But,
It's not an aggressive word.
Yeah.
Yeah, please stop, put that down. Yeah, can you kindly put that down? You know what I mean? You're not barking an order at them. It's more of a request at that point.
Yeah.
But you still want the same outcome. So, yeah, man, I used to use it all the time. It's a word to diffuse.
Yeah. The record shows, and one of them said, words the real HR employee later told police she never uses, according to the affidavit. Police tracked the money to the salon's bank account owned by the Arkbards. The affidavit said after the theft was detected, Mo Arkbard contacted Grand Rapids police detective and said he'd been fooled by a European woman named Dora into accepting funds and forwarding them to other accounts, according to the affidavit. That's a common scam, too, by the way. They'll contact people who do, especially smaller businesses, because it's not as suspicious to see money moving in and out of those accounts. And they'll say, hey, we're a financial services company, but we're not licensed for where you are. If you could, you know, if we can, you know, move money through your accounts, you keep a cut of it. And of course, anybody who's worked in the industry knows that that's laundering. Most people know it's laundering. But, you know, hey, it's lucrative, and they think they're not going to get caught. So, let's see. Secret Service agent said Arkbard's claims were false, and he'd use a similar ruse with the police after he received money from a scam targeting a Florida storage company. Police put the couple under surveillance in October, searched their apartment, offices, and BMW court records show. Police said earlier this year they needed more time to examine the data from the couple's phones and computers. The Arkbard's lawyer, Kevin Grise, said his clients have done nothing wrong and no charges should be filed. Quote, my clients were unwitting victims in this scheme, unquote. If they accepted money from a European woman named Dora, I think they're not unwitting victims. I think, you know, even if they are just money mules, they know what they're doing.
Yeah, at the very least, they're structuring.
You have to know. Anybody who works in business has to know that's what that is. I knew what structuring was when I worked at a grocery store, for God's sake. You okay there, Madman? It sounds like you just fell over.
I was going to point out, most people that work at any major grocery store, at least ones that do wiring, should know what structuring is.
That's how I knew what it was, from doing fucking Western Unions. Because I caught a guy trying to do five in a row to the same guy. It's like, what are you doing? And it's like, well, these are all for $2,999, because guess what? The reporting requirement for Western Union was $3,000, and they knew that somehow. Rat says it has a question mark after structuring. Really, dude? Okay. Structuring is where if there's a reporting requirement of $10,000 in a bank's red flag documents, for example, or in reporting, you know, large transactions to the government.
You do two $5,000 transactions to avoid it.
Yeah. Usually one of the easy checks is looking for amount, you know, several transactions that are just below the recording requirement.
And then you have smurfing, which is a subsect of structuring, which is when you get somebody to help you. So you have multiple people doing it, so it looks less suspicious.
And that's what a money mule is. That's somebody who accepts the transaction, keeps a cut, and then sends the rest on. That's how they do a lot of money laundering, is they'll spread it out among, you know, depending on what they're doing, could be hundreds of people. And they'll burn half the damn cash that they stole in just paying off the money mules and other transaction
7%.
Fees and shit. They don't care, because it's all stolen anyways.
15% for spillage, 7% for laundering. That's generally a breakdown.
That's better than what I've read. Of course.
Well, I wouldn't have it any other fucking way.
Of course, to be fair, most of what I've read when I was really learning about this, a lot of these scam operations getting started were coming out of India, and a lot of these guys were kind of amateur, so they really didn't care. So.
I don't think they do today either.
Yeah. Well, still, though, you don't want to... Spillage, it's the same concept in retail. Spillage, it's just stuff you're losing as a result of doing business. There's going to be a certain amount of damage.
Yeah, it's cost. It's cost of business.
You know, you might have them... You know, in the case of spillage, you might have one of your money mules get caught because they're posting pictures on Instagram with stacks of cash and hookers. Or
you don't understand if
you're going to have guys who accept the transition and never forward it on and try to disappear.
Yeah, like this is not a lifestyle that you start in middle age. You got to be doing this from day one.
Okay. Oh, so you're saying I need to rethink this document I was looking at. Gotcha.
Oh, it's look, you can have a bad month. Let's just say that. And you still have to pay people. They're not going to accept, sorry, I had a bad month, even if you aren't a licensed and bonded fucking business.
License and bonding is just terms of art. They don't mean anything, right?
Depending on the mule, they're just out of luck, too. They don't always get paid.
Yeah. Like they're your lowest. Your Smurfs are the lowest on the totem pole. You don't have to worry about them. But they're also your biggest fucking threat. Because they're generally a little unhinged to start with and will go to the police. They will put themselves in just to fuck you.
Yeah, so you have to make sure they don't really know who they're dealing with. So you usually have to do the tour thing. You
need to structure it to where you don't touch it. So
you have Papa Smurf discussing things with the little Smurfs.
Well, you've got to have your bottom bitch, if you follow me, right? Now, that person then deals with all the other bullshit under that. They're in charge of that. That's what you call middle management. Just enough power to tell people what to do, but not enough to make any decisions. Okay, so that's the way you want to structure it.
And so here's the question. Is that also the same person who you put in the fucking hospital to scare the other mules if you think some are getting ready to play games? Because they all know who that one is.
No, you never do that.
Okay.
Because then that could build distrust between you and that person. What you want to do is you make an example. Someone who they know, you know, that everybody around that organization knows that that person did not do what they're being accused of, but you fuck them into the ground no matter what. Like you really fucking, destroy them. And that way it puts the fucking fear of Jesus in the rest of them who are capable of fucking thievery.
Well, speaking of fucking thievery, you want to look at this next article?
Yeah, go for it.
All right, this one's hilarious. It's from Mac Rumors. Meta, better known as Facebook, plans to take a nearly 50% commission on digital asset purchases made inside the metaverse, the company has revealed, months after it complained about the maximum 30% cut that Apple takes for purchases to the App Store. I mean, you want to talk about fucking thievery. You do, it's like 47%. This week, Meta announced in new ways it's allowing creators to monetize and earn money from the metaverse. One way it's enabling that is by letting creators sell NFTs, or non-fungible tokens, on its Horizon Worlds platform. In the post, Meta declined to specify how much of a cut it would take for those purchases, but a company spokesperson told CNBC it would be 47.5% commission, inclusive of 30% hardware fee and a 17.5% platform charge. I mean, you think the scammers are bad.
Wow. Well, I suppose, dude, most of the people operating Meta are going to be Indians at this point. Tell me I'm wrong.
I can't. Meta's vice president of Horizons, Vivek Sharma, told The Verge that the nearly 50% commission, quote, is a pretty competitive rate in the market, unquote. Bullshit. Second Life didn't take that much. And I paid a stupid amount for land back in the day. And adding, quote, we believe in the other platforms being able to have their share, unquote. Yeah, sure, you can have, your pennies. See, ironically, Meta itself, including CEO Mark Zuckerberg, has been vocal about Apple's 15 to 30% cut in the App Store. In June, Zuckerberg wrote on Facebook that Meta would be keeping paid online events, subscription, badges, and other potential products free for creators until 2023. And then after that, Meta would announce a commission that is less than 30% of the Apple's. Okay, so online paid events, subscriptions, badges, and other products. Okay. Of course it should be free for the creators. That's the whole reason people are using your platform. Wow. The credit card company's got to be looking at these guys going, fuck, we undervalued what we could take from people. with their like 2 to 3% they take off transactions. In another post a few months later, taking aim at Apple's policy, Zuckerberg said that the App Store makes, quote, opportunities for creators to make money from their work harder. Facebook has a long history of calling Apple's App Store and its 15-30% commission monopolistic and harmful to customers, adding the platform, quote, blocks innovation and blocks competition. Well, I agree with the second part. I don't know that they block innovation. They do block competition, but they also let a lot of interesting apps into their store. Admittedly, they'll then take that app and integrate it into Apple. You know, if they can't buy it outright, they'll write their own version of it down the road. You know, remember how many flashlight apps there used to be? Now it's just part of the app. I mean, that's the easy one to find out. The one I think of is the automations thing. I forget what it used to be called, but nowadays it's Siri Shortcuts. But Workflow, that's what it was, Workflow. You know, it was a separate app. It was really fucking awesome because I had a bunch of workflows scripted out. I had buttons on my phone at the time that it did all these SSH commands on servers. So my phone would connect to the work VPN work, check things, and then run commands on servers via all these SSH commands and scripts on a regular basis. I basically had my phone doing monitoring through this, and then Apple went and fucked it, and I switched to Android for a while. And yeah, so and of course, Apple has responded saying it lays bare the hypocrisy. Of course it does. Everybody wants to be rich. So if then that madman, that's shit. That's the shit. Okay. But yeah, I just 50% fucking cut on the metaverse. Facebook's metaverse is never going to get off the ground. They have half of the VR market through Oculus and the Quests, right? And nobody is going to use Facebook's platform for it on those.
You think this is just a giant tax write-off scam? Well, we lost $11 billion trying to create this. Can we write that off?
Rats, didn't we talk about Apple, the EU suit, and stuff like that? We may not have. He's asking if we're going to talk about Apple fighting sideloading.
Not this week.
I could swear we talked about that. Not for sideloading. They don't want competition on their phone. I mean, it's not surprising at all. And I could swear we talked about it because I remember talking about a lot of the pirate stores being full of malware, at least on the Android side of the house. Doesn't matter. Last story. You guys ready for last story?
Yep.
Yep.
All right. Let's get that one in there. This is just comedy gold. So this is also I have on here because it'll drive RU nuts. The headline is from TechCrunch. Club Penguin rewrite shut down by Disney. Website seized by London police. However, this is your favorite faux pas, are you? It's not the London police. It's the City of London. Yeah.
Yep.
I'm not aware of this. I guess somebody was trying to recreate Club Penguin for some reason. quote, our world is breaking down around us, unquote. A Reddit user posted this morning in r/... Club Penguin Rewrite, documenting how the fan-driven, probably illegal remake of Club Penguin was slowly dwindling before their eyes. Rumors swirled among players, conjecturing about a legal conflict with Disney and an investigation by the City of London Police as elements of the virtual world disappeared in real time when players sent their final frantic messages through the colorful penguin avatars. Over 140,000 users were members of a Discord server for the game until today, when every message on the Discord disappeared. The game's website now shows a notice that it was seized by the City of London Police. In 2007, Disney purchased Club Penguin, the children's RPG that served as the first introduction to online fandom, for a whopping $700 million. Even then, as a child with little context about the tech industry acquisitions, the purchase seemed foreboding. At least the author's friends thought so in the Miniclip forums, where he fraudulently claimed to be 13. So who wrote this? They must be young. Amanda Silberling. Let's see. Yeah, but eventually those of us who were dedicated fans of virtual sledding games and dance parties grew out of it, and after once boasting 200 million users, the game was shut down due to lack of interest in 2017. Disney tried to shuttle remaining players into a new mobile game called Club Penguin Island, but it only lasted for a year. But ever since the end of Club Penguin, when the iceberg finally tipped in a strangely emotional moment, there have always been remakes out there for nostalgic adults to relive their days of collecting Puffles, dancing in the pizza shop, and speed running bands.
Getting raided by 4chan.
Okay. As Meta desperately tries to get people to play Horizon Worlds and embrace its interpretation of the metaverse, the fan-made remake of Club Penguin remained popular. Even the indie musician Soccer Mommy, who once opened for a Bernie Sanders rally, played a gig in the Club Penguin rewrite in April 2020. I think that probably tells you and all you need to know about the people using it if they got somebody who opened for a Bernie Sanders rally. I don't know enough about this. I didn't even know about it. I remember Club Penguin was just something that was a gag, but I mean, I never played it. You know, you want to talk about nostalgia for old things on the internet. I think about BBS's Doom and the Candy website with all the games on it. The Candy Stand games or whatever it was. That was fucking nostalgia. Running Napster off a fucking floppy disk on a school computer because they had a T1 and hiding a zip drive in my backpack. That's fucking nostalgia. Club Penguin is not nostalgia. Free Ski.
Weeble Stuffed.
The different rats of nostalgia game is Free Ski. Did you know you could press, I think it's F, and go faster and get away from the snow monster? A lot of people didn't know that. It blows their mind when you tell them that. Anyways. Oh, Rat said he was aware. Okay, cool. Figured that out by accident one day. Hit the wrong key by accident and sped up. I'm like, the fuck? And then once you knew, it's like, oh my God. Only one message on Discord remains, as posted early this morning by an admin. Quote, CPO rewritten is shut down effective immediately due to a full request by Disney, unquote, the admin said. Quote, we have voluntarily given control of the website over to the police for them to continue their copyright investigation. They shut it down for copyright. You know, they rewrote the whole thing on their own, so it can't be copyright of code. It's just got to be the graphics and the icons and I guess the name. So, in an emailed statement to TechCrunch, Detective Constable Daryl Freit of the Police Intellectual Property Crime Unit of the City of London Police... They must really have nothing left to do if they have a intellectual property crime division in the City of London Police.
I don't think they crack down on real crime anymore in the UK, dude.
Al Hazard says Constable. Did I say something wrong? Did I say it wrong? I've been drinking, like, a lot.
It got past me if you did.
Okay. Oh, just a funny name. For a second, I thought you might have been making a DS9 reference. I wasn't sure. Quote, following a complaint under copyright law, the PIPCU have seized a gaming website as part of an ongoing investigation of the site. Three people were arrested. Let me read that again. Three people were arrested on April 12th on suspicion of distributed materials infringing copyright, and searches were carried out. They arrested people for using little penguin icons.
God's serious sake. Matter, man.
Going up
against
Disney.
The mouse.
Yeah.
Exactly. You don't fuck with the mouse. Get the stick.
And searches were carried out. They have been released under investigation, and to aid with the police investigation, they agreed to sign over the website to the control of the PIPCU, unquote. This isn't the first time that Disney has been litigious over this IP that it no longer uses. In 2020, Disney shut down Club Penguin Online, another copy of the game that acquired over a million new players during the pandemic, the BBC reported. Apparently, the site was littered with racist, homophobic, and anti-Semitic and sexual messages, and one man involved in the site's arrest was on suspicion for possession of child pornography. Of course they were.
Imagine my shock.
Yeah. Per Club Penguin's rewritten legal disclaimer on the website, updated in April 2020 and accessible via the Wayback Machine, the game prompted harassment and obscene or the game prohibited harassment and obscene or bigoted language. It's possible that Disney could have sought to shut down Club Rewritten Club Penguin rewritten because the site generated ad revenue. But according to an old tweet from 2017, Club Penguin Readwrite used the ad money to pay for the server and donate the rest. It's unclear how long this policy has remained in place. Some users in a Reddit thread noted that the game had rolled out a feature that allowed players to watch an ad in exchange for an in-game gift, which also could have set off Mickey Mouse's alarm bells. Regardless, IP theft is IP theft, but also a fun penguin game is a fun penguin game. So yeah, it's been completely shut down. And most of the screenshots they're showing here look like raids. So, because I'm pretty...
Was it initially a free game, or did you have to pay for that?
I don't know. I think it's got to have been free. I mean, if it's getting raided by 4chan, it would have been free.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I'm waiting for a paid game to go down, because I think you would have an argument for setting up a pirate server on a game that you bought if it requires online servers to play.
Original EverQuest, they did that because you had to pay for that. There have been lots of EverQuest servers still running around out there. I know there's been new EverQuest games, but I think the original is long dead, isn't it?
Yeah. If you want to play the original, you're hopping on a pirate server.
City of Heroes. Rats wants to see a cage match between the Disney and the Nintendo lawyers. I don't know, man. They might stop in the middle of the fight, realize they're on the same side, and turn on the rest of the world.
Exactly.
Actually, given Disney's track record, I wouldn't be surprised if they've tried to buy Nintendo, like, every year. So. Actually, somebody did try to... I think it was Microsoft tried to buy out Nintendo in the early days, and Nintendo told them to get bent. So.
I don't think the Japanese government would allow Nintendo to be bought by a foreign entity.
No, probably not.
Anyway.
So, all right, let's, come on, mouse, here we go. Let's do this. Since we're, talking about nostalgia here, I thought this would be a pretty good dojo for tonight. And this is a community-enhanced edition of DOSBox. And what's cool is they've added in emulation of a 3DFX Voodoo graphics card. So any of the old DOS games that use that, you know, like it wraps it to OpenGL, basically. Improved emulation of OPL3, improved balance and authenticity in FM sound playback, improved PC speaker, emulation of the Roland MT32. That's pretty cool for a lot of the old DOS games. Integration of Fluid Synth, so you could, you know, use sound fonts. Better joystick support, better mouse mapping. Support for 384 megabytes of RAM. And so they actually say required for running Windows 9X and DOSBox. So you can actually run Windows 95/Windows 98 in this version of DOSBox. They're flat out saying it on the website. Better video memory for build engine games, so you don't get the sprite flickering. And some support for timestamps for Q files for like MP3 and stuff like that. So, yeah, if you're feeling nostalgic for the DOS days, this thing looks like a pretty nice bundle. I know there's also DOSBox X, and of course there's instructions for adding a bunch of stuff to the basic DOSBox, but it looks like a pretty nice little build, especially with that 3DFX and the Roland MT32. So that alone probably makes it worth playing with, but... They actually have it set, according to the joystick support, they've got it set to where you could use two complete Xbox 360 controllers. So, anyways, though, I thought this was a nice little build of DOSBox and something to play with, especially if you're wanting to do the old, you know, thing. Now, Rats just mentioned buying Monkey Island on GOG, and something I've noticed both GOG and Steam do with a lot of the classic games, it's a bundle a version of DOSBox that I'm assuming is tuned for whatever the game was, so... But, anyways, that's all I've got for tonight. Of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Peer decking every Thursday. The Galaxy 15 radio site and subreddit. Madman, closing thoughts.
Earlier in the podcast, Aryu and I started getting into what happened in 2008, the financial crisis, and a few of the stupid things. If any of you are really interested in it, you can check out a podcast on NPR. Their Planet Money team did a podcast called The Giant Pool of Money and Return to the Giant Pool of Money. Those kind of dive into it a bit. they underplay how big of an effect the Community Reinvestment Act had on all of that, but it's still a pretty decent podcast.
Are you? Closing thoughts?
Well, and once you're good and fucking depressed after listening to Madman stuff, you can watch a movie called The Outfit. And I'm calling it Movie of the Year, but highly recommended, The Outfit.
All right.
Playing on all your high seas sailing clubs today.
There you go. So, and of course, I forgot to read out the IRC. In the IRC tonight, Alhazard, Cyberlard, Psychros, Herats, Madman, myself. We still have not found the coffee maker. That's it.
I told you I unplugged it. It does not need to be on the fucking internet.
Rats is asking you what the episode was, Madman. What the number was, if you know.
Oh, I don't remember the number. It was in their first couple seasons, though, if you're just going back through the archives.
What was the name of it again, Madman?
The name of the episode is The Giant Pool of Money. It's what actually started their Planet Money podcast series.
Okay, The Giant Pool of Money.
All right. And then they did a follow-up called A Return to the Giant Pool of Money.
That and the short, the big short, is worth watching.
All right, let's play the... he also says he can't find the outfit on IMDb.
Yeah, because it's not really out yet.
Oh.
One moment. It's on F-Movies. I'll throw you a link.
Hey, hey, man,
Not on the recording.
Not on the...
Not on the recording.
Okay.
God right, damn it, Madman.
Yeah. We're 10 minutes over.
Take him
over.
Out the back of the chemical shed.
We're 10 minutes over. Let me play the sound clips, and then you can do whatever.
We're sorry. Your call cannot be completed as dialed.
Shut up, Wesley.